All right. So, first of all, I really want to apologize about this being late. For those of you that don't know, my dad has Parkinson's and was recently diagnosed with liver cancer. And it has been an emotional and a physical struggle to try to keep up with everything in an ever-changing environment. And so anyway, I will move on before I start calling. So y'all, this is the last week, and I know that y'all are probably just as excited as I am to get here. And so let's talk about antibiotics. So before we get started, I just want to give you a little bit of background. Antibiotics work basically by two methods. So they either kill the bacteria by destroying the cell wall, or they inhibit normal protein creation that is vital for the bacteria to survive. And so we're going to look at different antibiotics and talk about the different ways that they work. When we look at antibiotics, we're going to talk about narrow spectrum, which narrow spectrum covers just a smaller number of bacteria. It's very specialized for a specific set of bacteria. Then you have broad spectrum, and that's like throwing a really wide net. And so if you think about it, like you're out in the ocean, you're deep sea fishing, you've got a little bitty net, that's your narrow spectrum. It's going to catch just a few of what you're looking for. And then the broad spectrum is your wide net that's going to catch a whole bunch of stuff in the process. So obviously, when we're talking about antibiotics, we're looking at treating some type of infection, or some type of pathogen. So let's start with our very classic penicillins. So when we're looking at penicillins, we have a lot of different options here. We have some that are very narrow spectrum, and we have some that are broad spectrum. When looking at your narrow spectrum, you're looking at your Pen G and your Pen VK, penicillin VK. It is very commonly used in like dental procedures for dental abscesses, things like that. However, it is actually a very good antibiotic for your general infections that persist of a very narrow spectrum. Your broad spectrum is going to be your amoxicillin. This is a very common drug, especially for children. It comes in a liquid formation. We give it for virtually ear infections, upper respiratory infections, lots of things with kids. You're going to see a lot of amoxicillin. When you're looking at your amoxicillin with clavulanic acid, this is, you may recognize the brand name of this is going to be Augmentin. But remember, we don't test on brand names. You're tested on generics, which is going to be the amoxiclavulanic. You also have antistaphylococcal penicillins, which is your Nafcillin, and then you also have antipseudomonal, which is your Tigecycline and Piperacillin. Piperacillin, you will see a lot inpatient. It's an IV formulation only. There is no PO version of this. And so it is only administered through IV. This is the one that y'all may see on a lot of the social media, where the nurses are shaky, shaking, shaking, shaking. It takes a while to mix that one. So that's the Piperacillin. Zosyn is the brand name for it. Now, your penicillins, they work by destroying the bacterial cell wall. That is the eraser function, not the highlighter function. All right. So they weaken the cell wall and cause the bacteria to basically die because of lack of a cell wall. Now, your treatments or what it treats includes your gram-positive cocci, your gram-negative cocci, and some spirochetes. When you're looking at your penicillins, your complications, the biggest one is going to be allergies. There are a lot of people who have penicillin allergies. Now, there's also a lot of people who tell you they're allergic to penicillin, Because they had some GI discomfort or they had something going on that was not necessarily an allergy, but however, it's listed as an allergy. So anytime we see a patient with a penicillin allergy, we are not going to administer any penicillins, and we're going to be very cautious with our cephalosporins, which we're going to talk about in a minute. Now, you can have some renal side effects with your penicillins. It's not very common, but it can cause some renal problems. Usually your lower doses are going to be less likely to cause that renal impairment. It's going to be some of your higher doses, especially your IV antibiotic or your IV administrations. Hyperkalemia with dysrhythmias, that is usually only found with very high doses of your PEM-G. And then the hypernatremia is also usually with your IVs. I will tell you that on a general scale, if you are not allergic to penicillin, it is probably the most easily tolerated antibiotic that we have. Now, your contraindications, who are we not going to give it to? We're not going to give it to anybody who has a history of hypersensitivity. Obviously, if you have ever had any type of reaction to penicillin, we're not going to give you any penicillin. Also, if there is a significant risk of renal dysfunction, that is usually going to be for your patients who are very elderly or either very young, those age extremes, as well as patients who are acutely ill, who have ICU type illnesses. And then you have the risk for cross sensitivity with cephalosporins. It's kind of a an old school way to think about it, but basically when you're talking about penicillins, the way I learned it is you have your pink pig. Now, y'all know that I'm not an artist, but you have basically pink pigs and blue boxes. And so, if you are allergic to penicillin, it may be that you are allergic to just, the pink pig, or it may be that you are allergic to just the blue box. And so, what happens is with your cephalosporins are going to include a component that is basically the same as the blue box. And so, if you are allergic to penicillins because you are allergic to the blue box, then you would also be allergic to the cephalosporins. So, anytime there is a reported allergy to a cephalosporin, you want to talk to your patient and see, have you been on a penicillin before? Have you ever taken amoxicillin? Have you taken Augmentin? And see if they have a history of taking those drugs without a reaction. And we're going to basically do the same thing when we talk about our cephalosporins. So, with penicillins, we do not mix penicillins with any of our aminoglycosides, and that is because of the potential for inactivation of the aminoglycoside. And so, we don't mix them in the same IV solution. However, you can give them separately and there is no interaction between the two. On your nursing administration, on your PIN-VK, your amoxicillin, your traditional penicillins. I'm trying to find the highlighter. I'm on the highlighter. Let's pick a different color. So with your PIN-VK, your amoxicillin, your amox with clavulanic acid, you want to administer those with food. Okay, your PIN-VK, amoxicillin, and Augmentin, which is your amoxicillin with clavulanic acid, you want to administer those with food. However, for all the others, you would take with 8 ounces of water either 1 hour before or 2 hours after meals. Those instructions are your basic instructions for taking on an empty stomach. If my husband's ringtone, if you hear that in the background. So also, we're going to monitor for allergies. We want to make sure, and you're going to see this throughout this entire presentation, that we want to complete the entire course of antibiotics. We don't want to expose the bacteria to the antibiotics And then withdraw it before all of the bacteria are eradicated. And that is what causes resistance. And so when patients do not complete the entire course of their antibiotics, it increases the risk that they will have more complicated infections with resistance to our antibiotics. Also, we want to advise patients to use an additional contraceptive while taking penicillin, and that is because the penicillin can reduce the effectiveness of oral contraceptives. All right, next we're going to talk about your cephalosporins. So when we're talking about the cephalosporins, we have four generations of cephalosporins. So the most common is going to be your cephalexin. Your brand for that is going to be Keflex. Cefazolin, those are going to be your first generation. Second generation is going to be cefaclor. Your third generation is ceftriaxone. You may recognize this one as rocephin. And then cefepime is your fourth generation. These are very broad spectrum bactericidals. Your cephalosporins are very commonly administered for lots of different things. And each of the generations has a very specific set of uses. So we're just talking about broad coverage of cephalosporins and how we would treat those. So they are beta-lactams. They are very similar to penicillins. They destroy the bacterial cell wall. And so each generation, again, is very unique. And so when you're looking at the cephalosporins and their coverage, it is a very broad spectrum coverage. Some of your more common uses include urinary tract infections, or Keflex is one of our more common UTI medications, as well as rocephin. Postoperative infections, pelvic infections, as well as your meningitis. When we're talking about our complications, we've got that allergy and hypersensitivity. And so again, with our contraindications, we need to recognize that your cephalosporins and your penicillins can have those cross reactivities. Now the bleeding tendencies, that's going to be, more with your ceftriaxone and your cefetatum. And so we just want to make sure that, you know, patients, especially those who may already be taking anticoagulants, who have some type of bleeding disorder, we would be cautious in administering that medication to them and make sure that we're monitoring that. Your cephalosporins can also, especially with your IV ones, can cause thrombophlebitis. So really, you know, make sure that you're diluting your infusions adequately, administering them in a slower rate and diluting if you're giving a bolus dosing. They can also cause renal insufficiency. Make sure that we're using the lowest dose, you know, to make sure that we're not causing damage to the kidneys. And then, of course, with your ceftriaxone, y'all remember that this is mixed with lidocaine. So that should tell you that it can definitely cause some pain at the site. Your contraindications, you know, we're not going to give it to anybody with a history of any penicillin allergy. And we're going to use cautiously with those renal impairments because we understand that it can cause renal insufficiency as well as bleeding tendencies. And so if we know that it's already a complication, we would be cautious in administering to patients who already have those conditions. On your interactions, I do think ATI went through a couple, but it's very rare. And so I'm not going to make you focus on the interactions with cephalosporins. On your nursing administration, again, same thing we talked about. Make sure you take the entire course. These you do want to take with food to help to decrease the GI side effects. And then anytime it's in a liquid formation given to children, it must be stored in the refrigerator. All right, next we're going to talk about your carbapenems. This includes imipenem and meropenem. Meropenem is probably the more common one that you're going to see administered in a hospital situation. These are beta-lactams. They do destroy the cell wall, and they are very broad spectrum, but are used specifically for very significant infections. These are most of the time IV use. They are not used, you know, prescribed to be taken at home. So these are going to be your infections that require some type of hospitalization. They are broad spectrum. They cover lots of different things. UTIs, pneumonias are some of the more common ones that we see. When you're looking at complications, allergies and hypersensitivities, they can cause some GI upset, usually, vomiting, nausea. And so we want to monitor, make sure we're giving fluids with these medications. And then supra infections, these are things that, your vaginal yeast infections, oral thrush, these are things that occur because we are giving antibiotics specifically to kill a certain set of bacteria. But because, especially with these broad spectrum antibiotics, we're killing good bacteria, bacteria that we need. You've probably heard about taking probiotics to help keep the good bacteria in your GI tract. And so that's what we mean with super infections. These are very strong medications and they will disrupt the normal bacterial growth that is needed in the body. The only contraindication or precaution that I want you to consider is going to be with renal impairment. We know that the kidneys are going to be the ones that are excreting this medication, so we need to be very cautious in administering these very strong antibiotics. Interactions, valproic acid. It does interact with the valproic acid and it lowers the effectiveness of that, and so it can cause some breakthrough seizures and nursing administration. Same thing. Take the entire course. Now, most of the time these are administered inpatient, so we want to make sure that we are giving all of them. Now, vancomycin is a drug on its own. Okay. It I believe ATI listed as like other antibiotics, or I don't remember exactly what their wording is, but the reason you don't have a classification or prototype is because vancomycin is the drug. It does destroy the bacterial cell wall. Now, your complications, vancomycin is a very strong antibiotic. And so it can cause ototoxicity. It is rare and it actually is reversible. It can also cause infusion reactions as well as thrombophlebitis at the IV site. And so, when you're administering these medications, you want to do good assessment of your IV sites. Be sure that you're running this very slowly. We typically want to run this over a full hour. And then the renal toxicity, make sure that we're monitoring the kidney functions and, not administering it to patients who are already having renal impairment. Ooh, what's that? All right. Here's the oddity, corn allergy. If you're allergic to corn, you are not supposed to take vancomycin. Now, I will tell you, I have never ran into this situation in real life. And I do briefly remember learning the corn allergy thing. But I've never seen corn on anybody's allergy profile. Now, y'all are probably gonna be sitting there thinking, like, I know four people with corn allergies. I don't know anybody with corn allergies. Never seen that on an allergy profile for anybody. Obviously, and then there are patients who are allergic to vancomycin, and so that would be hypersensitivity. We want to caution with renal impairment, and because of that ototoxicity, caution with any existing hearing loss, and caution with your elderly. Interactions. Your loop diuretics and your aminoglycosides also carry a risk for ototoxicity. So if we're going to administer vancomycin, which has a risk for ototoxicity, with another drug that has a risk for ototoxicity, we are increasing the risk for ototoxicity. The one oddity, other than the corn allergy, about the vancomycin is vancomycin has peak and trough levels, and every facility uses a different protocol for how you draw your peak and troughs. Some only draw the trough. They want to know that 30 minutes before they administer a dose, that your trough levels are low enough that we're not going to overdose you on the vancomycin. There are others that will do a peak and a trough. So wherever you end up working, be sure you know your facility's regulations for how they want their peak and troughs drawn.
We recently did clinicals at South Central. Every third dose of vancomycin, they draw a trough level 30 minutes before administration, before the due time of the vancomycin. I believe Forest General also does third dose, but it's been a hot minute since I've been at Forest General. All right, moving on. The next class of drugs we're going to talk about is your tetracyclines. This includes your doxycycline, your minocycline, and dimethylcycline. Excuse me. Now, this is the first one that we have talked about that is going to inhibit this protein synthesis. So, by inhibiting the bacteria's ability to create the proteins that it requires for survival, it creates a stunted growth and eventually kills the bacteria because it's unable to produce those proteins necessary. The most common use of doxycycline is going to be your acne. Patients, teenagers, young adults are often put on doxycycline to manage severe cases of acne. It is also used in the treatment of chlamydia as well as your mycoplasma pneumonia. And then we also use it in the treatment of H. pylori. Now, there's lots of other drugs. I personally, as a provider, use doxycycline often for sinus infections because it has some anti-inflammatory properties to it. And that is helpful when I'm treating patients who have sinusitis. Doxycycline, because of its profile for acne, it's also used a lot to treat infections of the skin, from either cellulitis, wounds, things like that. Complications, it can cause some GI toxicity, tooth discoloration. Now, let me find a pen here. All right, so this tooth discoloration is what's going to lead you to these two contraindications. In the fourth month of pregnancy, we do not administer tetracyclines to pregnant mothers. And then for children from ages 4 months to 8 years, we also do not administer tetracycline because of the risk of tooth discoloration. Now, it also causes photosensitivity, and so be cautious, in the summer, administering tetracycline to, what I've seen in practice is it's usually mothers who are taking their children to, softball, baseball, those sports where they're sitting out in the sun for hours on end. By taking the tetracycline, these patients are more likely to have significant sunburns. Now, it also causes some hepatotoxicity as well as the risk for those supra infections that we talked about. Your contraindications, we talked about the fourth month of pregnancy, 4 months to 8 years. And then we're going to caution with your kidney and liver disease because of the hepatotoxicity. All right, so your interactions. So basically, if you use tetracycline and the patient takes it with milk products, calcium supplements, iron supplements, laxatives that contain magnesium or your antacids, it reduces the absorption of the tetracycline. So you want to educate them, don't take this medication with a glass of milk. Don't take this medication while you're taking, Tums and what's the Tums and Rolaids. Obviously, kind of the same thing with those oral contraceptives. It reduces the efficacy of those. And then your minocycline and your doxycycline increase your risk for ditch toxicity. Nursing administration, do not take this medication at bedtime because it increases the risk of esophageal ulcerations. Same story. Take the entire course and use additional contraception. All right, last set we're going to talk about is your macrolides. This is your erythromycin and azithromycin. Your azithromycin, you're probably familiar with. It's commonly the Z-pak. So your macrolides inhibit bacterial protein synthesis. So if they can't create the proteins they need to survive, the bacteria is unable to continue thriving. It is used as well for the treatment of chlamydia and is, I don't think ATI said strep, but I added strep because macrolides are your first line treatment for strep. And so it is usually going to be your azithromycin. Common complications include your GI discomfort, your prolonged QT intervals, and ototoxicity, usually at very high doses. This prolonged QT interval, if you remember, that's your EKG. So you've got a P wave, Q, R, S, T wave. Okay, that's ugly. All right, so your QT interval is from your Q to your T. And so this interval becomes elongated. And so when you think about what's happening in an EKG, so this is your atrial contraction. Your QRS is your ventricle contraction. And then your T wave is your ventricle relaxation. And so if I prolong the time my ventricles are contracting and they're not relaxing, I'm decreasing the amount of time that they have to refill with blood from the atria and then pump more out. The prolonged QT intervals were a big deal during COVID. I don't know if you remember, but during COVID, like for whatever reason, even though it's an antibacterial and COVID was a virus, everybody was getting azithromycin, and then we were adding that hydroxychloroquine on top of it. Both of those medications prolong QT intervals, and so there was this lengthy discussion about should all of these patients be getting EKGs before they get these medications. Contraindications, anybody who already has a prolonged QT interval, and then anybody with liver disease. Your interactions, If taken with either antihistamines, theophylline, carbamazepine, warfarin, or digoxin, the macrolides reduce the metabolism of these medications. And so, you know, obviously warfarin is a pretty important drug. And so if we're decreasing the metabolism of it, then we could develop bleeding. Digoxin, we could develop toxicity. Your nursing administration, guess what, y'all? We need to complete the entire course. And we also need to monitor our liver functions if taken for more than 2 weeks. Remember, you may not remember, but your Z-Pak is basically a five-day course of treatment. You know, very, very rarely do we see somebody taking it for more than 2 weeks. All right, y'all, that is it. Again, I apologize for the delay in getting this to y'all. And anyway, all right. Yeah, we're done.